Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, July 23rd. And while it's been almost a week tomorrow, that our mayor has passed away, I thought I would still start with the Paul Osborne column, the City Beat. The kind of news that doesn't seem real is what he called his column. Because I know Thursday the 23rd, the funeral procession and other activities in honor of Mayor McElroy were being held today and are probably concluded by the time that this recording goes on air. But Paul Osborne writes, I received a call at my office early Friday morning that Mayor Mike McElroy had died a few minutes earlier. I couldn't believe what I had just heard and sat back in my chair, trying to comprehend the words. Mayor McElroy had passed away were words that didn't fit together. My feeling of loss was significant, and it was hard to concentrate on anything else that day. Tuna had been my friend for many years. We were elected to municipal office in 2003. He was elected city councilman, and I was elected mayor. We were the only new faces on the council, and there was a certain bond that immediately formed between us. And most people know he was my strongest supporter on the council, even during times on projects that were hotly debated. Both of us were reelected to our respective offices 4 years later, and when I left office, he was the first person to check on me to see how I was doing. He also stopped by the newspaper to tell me that he was going to run for mayor and push ahead some projects that we had been working on, which he did. We stayed in touch after he was elected mayor, endorsed by this newspaper, and we talked often about what was happening in this city. I always appreciated the fact that, although it wasn't necessary, he would include me in a groundbreaking or ribbon-cutting of a project we had worked on together when I was mayor and had been completed while he was mayor. He told me and others that I had done a lot of work on the project before leaving office, and he wanted me to be a part of its completion. I'm sure some people wondered why I was a part of a few of those ceremonies, and in the seating arrangement, I tried to sit in the back row so that other members of the current council would get the recognition they deserved for voting to move the project ahead. He saw what I was trying to do, and he slapped his hand down on the seat of the chair next to him and said, "You're sitting right here, next to me." Tuna never forgot what we had gone through together during the years we served, and I found that remarkable. As a result, I have hard hats and other items from participating in such events after I left the mayor's office, which in some way seem more significant than some I received as mayor, because my friend didn't forget me. When Tuna was hospitalized for a heart issue during the time I was mayor, he called and apologized because he wouldn't be able to attend an upcoming council meeting. I told him not to worry about it, and the top priority was his health. When he returned to council in a fairly short time, he apologized to me again for missing the meeting. Tuna was always concerned about not letting anyone down. I couldn't help but think, after receiving news of his death, that had he survived what is believed to have been a heart attack on Friday, he would probably have apologized to the council and community for being hospitalized and unable to carry out his duties for a while. Tuna was always sensitive about carrying out his responsibilities. I know it seems a little strange, but whenever Tuna and I would see each other at some event or at the newspaper office or talk on the phone, it was always about what was happening in the city, and we would talk about the community like two people would talk about a sports team they loved. Obviously, that was true when we served on council together, but that continued after I left office. I think a lot of people have been thinking about the last time they saw or talked with Tuna in the days since his death. There's been so many comments made about him and the relationships he had with people over the years. Sometimes people tend to exaggerate the positive aspects of a person's life after they pass away, but I don't think that's the case with Tuna. When I left the mayor's office, I couldn't have been more pleased that my friend Tuna was the next mayor, chosen through election by the people to succeed me. I will miss him terribly as time goes by, and so will everyone who knew him. My thoughts and prayers have been with wife Lynn, their son Matt, family members, and their many, many friends. May God bless and comfort all of them, our community and nation. So what happens now? DeCare Mayor Pro Tem Julie Moore Wolfe has assumed the duties of mayor on an interim basis until a new mayor is elected by the city council. The council can select Julie as mayor or another city council member to serve as mayor. I reported in today's print edition of the Tribune that someone not on council could also be selected, based on what I remembered as a situation involving Mayor Anderson many years ago. However, I've now learned that the state law dictates the selection of the next mayor must come from the city council. So maybe that law went into effect since the appointment I remembered from many years ago, or maybe my memory is faulty, so I will have to double check. The council has 60 days to make that appointment. The person chosen will serve until the next election in 2017, when the voters will make their decision on what person they want to fill the remaining 2 years of Mayor McElroy's term. Well, it's a solemn way to begin this hour, but I thought that was a touching column, and if you've heard it before, well, I hope you enjoyed hearing it again. So we move on to more recent news. We begin with an article from the Decatur Herald and Review, written by Huey Freeman, who's a staff writer for the paper. This from Decatur. Woman says life threatened with knife to her throat. Chase Wendell, 30, is back in jail on another charge of domestic battery with a prior domestic battery conviction after he reportedly punched, kicked, and hit a woman with a broom, then held a knife to her throat. He's being held in jail on $50,000 bond. Wendell is serving a 24-month probation term after he pleaded guilty April 30th to one felony count of domestic battery with a prior conviction for repeatedly punching the same woman during an incident which occurred April 11th. In the most recent incident, the victim told police that Wendell entered her home about 1:15 a.m., July 15th, and began to hit her in the head, following an argument in which he accused her of taking his clothes from his vehicle, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Kenneth Duffy. After his initial attack, the victim ran away from him inside her residence, attempting to escape further harm. Chase struck her in the lower left side of her back with a broom and broke the handle from its head, Duffy wrote in a statement. As she continued to flee, Chase threw two knives at her. He missed her, but she fell onto the floor. While she was on the ground, Chase kicked her in the head, back, and buttocks, the victim told police. Chase then grabbed her by the hair and pulled her up to a standing position and held a serrated knife to her throat. The victim pleaded for her life for the sake of her young child, and Chase eventually let her go. A witness told police is substantially the same story. The witness said that Chase pulled the victim around by her hair, kicked the victim in the head, back, and butt, grabbed the victim by her hair, and pulled her to her feet and held a knife to her throat as she pleaded for him not to hurt her. Wendell acknowledged to police that he did go to the victim's residence, but stated he never touched the victim. All the victim's injuries are self-inflicted, Wendell told police. In addition to his April domestic battery conviction, Wendell was convicted February 12th of domestic battery physical contact in a 2014 case for which he was sentenced to 12 months of conditional discharge, a lesser form of probation. In 2008, he was convicted of aggravated battery, great bodily harm, for which he was sentenced to 2 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. He is due in circuit court for a preliminary hearing in his most recent case on August 5th. Our next article is written by Kurt Erickson, who's an Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief. Law seeks to prevent welfare benefits for the dead. A new state law could bring an end to the practice of accidentally doling out welfare benefits to dead people. Under legislation signed by Governor Bruce Rauner, the Illinois Department of Human Services will begin a monthly review of state death records to determine if any of the deceased are still receiving aid. The new program comes on the heels of two audits showing that millions of taxpayer dollars have been paid out to people who were no longer living. In February, Auditor General William Holland found that the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services last year paid out $3.7 million for medical services to 1,111 people who already had been recorded as dead. That came after Holland found the state had overpaid $12.3 million for medical care to 6,850 dead people in 2013. State officials blame the problem on an antiquated computer system. State Senator Kyle McCarter, a Republican of Lebanon, sponsored the proposal. "You would think this is common sense. We've actually paid out benefits to people that are dead," McCarter said. The measure was co-sponsored by State Representatives Dan Brady, a Republican of Bloomington, Jerry Costello, a Democrat of Smithton, and John Cavaletto, a Republican from Salem. The new law requires the department to cross-reference its roster of public aid recipients with electronic death records from the Department of Public Health each month. A public aid recipient who is found to have a death record shall be subject to an immediate cancellation of their public aid benefits, including the deactivation of their link card. The registration is House Bill 3311. Gosh, just a comment here. My question would be, who is able to access those benefits? If anyone, that's curious. I wish I knew a little bit more. Our next article is written by Allison Petty, who's an H&R staff writer, this from Decatur rather than Springfield. Decatur begins fine forgiveness program. Starting this week, the city will offer a waiver of fines for first-time offenders of many city code violations. The fine forgiveness program applies only to citations issued by the city's neighborhood inspectors, which would include trash and debris, storage of machinery, zoning and housing code violations. It allows residents to avoid paying the fine for a violation if they correct the issue before their administrative court date or by the date ordered by the court's hearing officer. The initiative comes as part of several changes to the administrative court and code enforcement system following a review earlier this year. The overall goal that we don't want to lose focus on is that we're trying to work to clean up our community. That's the overarching goal of all of this, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said. We think this will help with that. The city has developed a brochure detailing common code violations and explaining the opportunity for a fine waiver, which is only available to first-time offenders. That information will now be mailed out with citations, Saya said. He said the city would increase marketing efforts to spread awareness of code requirements, which will include media outreach and providing some information in a monthly newsletter residents receive with their water bills. Residents who receive a citation for weeds or 72-hour health and safety issues for which the city can take corrective action are only eligible for the waiver if they fix the problem before the city does. Most property violations result in a $150 citation. Those found guilty in administrative court also face $140 in court costs, although it is possible to avoid a court appearance by correcting the violation and paying the fine. Taya said all eligible violations in administrative court would be treated as first offenses starting Tuesday. "We're starting this new program, so we're basically starting over," he said. Earlier this month, the city made a map of code violations available on its website at DecaturIL.gov. The map outlines properties with code violations in red, and it is updated instantly. In addition, landlords and other property owners can now register an email address with the city to receive faster courtesy notification of violations on their properties. The changes are meant to address landlords' complaints that they were not given enough time or notice to fix problems before facing steep fines. Our next article was written by Emily Steele, an H&R staff writer, and it carries the headline, "Groundhogs Creating Whole New Problem in Decatur." Tammy Wilder was driving to work in June when she noticed her car was taking a long time to shift between gears. The car was old, but it had been running fine, so she took it to her dad to check it out. He opened the hood and wasn't paying attention and didn't even notice the groundhog laying there, Wilder said. The large rodent had crawled into the engine compartment to chew on the wiring while she had it parked outside her apartment at Wabash Crossing and survived two rides inside. That's the second time one of Wilder's cars was victim of a groundhog's natural tendencies, and she's not alone. Regional biologist John Greischbaum has been covering central Illinois for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources since November 2014. It's difficult to get a population estimate for wild animals. Groundhogs are tracked by roadkill counts, but Greisbaum said Decatur is unique in the number of calls he gets. His district includes Champaign, where he can count on one hand the number of nuisance wildlife control permits he's issued in the past 9 months, he said. "I've had 70 from Decatur," Greisbaum added. Many of those are for trapping and removing raccoons, but groundhogs are tied for second with opossums for property damage and other unwanted interaction. They definitely do very well in an urban environment, Greischbaum said. There's fewer predators and more food and lots of open spaces. Greischbaum said, "Groundhogs, also known as woodchucks, live in open, vacant areas such as parks or community gardens where they can graze. These stout rodents can get up to 15 pounds and dig basketball-sized tunnels. Besides chewing and eating up gardens, their large burrows are also a concern when they go underneath houses. Like most wild animals, groundhogs can become aggressive if cornered. If people don't want to get a permit to trap an animal themselves, they'll call a licensed nuisance wildlife control operator such as Cody Walker. Most of the time, if people call, it's because they're burrowing under a shed," Walker said. "They'll crack a foundation." This time of year, the phone for Catchit Wildlife Control rings twice a day about groundhogs in neighborhoods. This year and last year was a lot more than it had been in the past. There's a lot more groundhog babies. Greichbaum suspects groundhogs are becoming more of a nuisance because the adults are too large for predators such as hawks and coyotes, and they're not a popular species for trapping. Overdevelopment is also pushing people into wildlife habitat, Walker said. The answer to the car chewing, in part, comes from the automotive industry's attempt to go green in recent years. Vehicle manufacturers traded petroleum-based parts for soy byproducts, including wire insulation. The unintended side effect has been animals chewing the tasty pieces. Wilder said she didn't start noticing groundhogs in the open field next to Wabash Crossing, owned by the city, until a few years ago. Her theory is the construction there for the new Community Health Improvement Center clinic is driving the groundhogs into the Wabash Crossing neighborhood. Walker and Greisbaum agreed that's a possibility. If they've been doing some excavating, it would definitely move them out, Greisbaum said. Greisbaum issues at least a dozen free nuisance permits a week that allow residents to bait and trap any number of a certain species within 3 months. Once captured, the animal needs to be released somewhere with the property owner's permission or euthanized. If a caller has trapped a groundhog, we'll come pick it up for them, said Chief Warden Adam Edwards of Macon County Animal Control. In spring and summer, it's normal for animal control to pick up a trapped groundhog every day. Edwards said animal control wardens prefer relocating the animals to euthanizing them. The DNR goes a step further and recommends finding ways to live with the animal. Since there's no way to get rid of groundhogs entirely, Walker's business can take preventative measures such as filling holes or above and below ground fencing to prevent damaging and discourage burrowing. They can be tricky if you don't know what you're doing, and even if you do know, they get smart fast, Walker said. Our next article carries the headline, CrossFit. Decatur residents make international CrossFit games a family activity. And this is from Decatur, an article written by Emily Steele, an H&R staff writer. When competing on an international stage, it's nice to know you're not alone. In 2014, Lance Schaefer, now 62, competed in the CrossFit Games and placed fifth in the world for his age group. This year, his sister-in-law, Vicky Good, 60, will join him in representing their family and Decatur in the world of the fitness program CrossFit. I wasn't going to do it again, but my wife talked me into it, Schaefer said. I'm aiming for the podium. He's equally confident in Good, who went into the competition that started Tuesday, ranked fourth out of 800 athletes worldwide. She'll get top three, he said with confidence. CrossFit enhanced workouts are never easy, but the series of cardiovascular exercises, weightlifting, and core exercises are popular at Decatur Memorial Hospital's specific performance enhancement center. Last Thursday, manager Josh Newton led Schaefer and Good through their final workout before traveling to Carson, California for the 3-day competition. It was designed to be an easy workout, lifting weights starting at 75 pounds with core and cardio mixed in, but the pair refused to take it slow. Even on an easy day, they're sweating, Newton said. I love it. Before the workout, the pair got high fives and good wishes from other gym members. Both said the gym has become a family. They sold t-shirts there to help fund the trip to California. Every year, CrossFit athletes worldwide test their skills against each other in the open competition. Their performances are measured on weight lifted, time and number of repetitions on moves such as deadlifts, burpee squats, or handstand push-ups. Good has been competing since 2012 and improved her rank and strength each year. She started doing CrossFit along with several other relatives in 2010. Between their children and siblings, seven people in their close family do the program that Good credits with relieving knee issues, giving her more energy, and improving physical and mental health. "You are never too old to try something new," she said. Newton said for some reason their gym produces competitors who do well in the master's group for ages 40 and older. He joined several family members and others from the gym traveling to California to cheer on Good and Schaefer. "They're representing Decatur very well," Newton said. "We're not after fame, but it definitely doesn't hurt our business." To check on their progress and view video of the competition, visit games.crossfit.com. Just a quick announcement about Mad Hatter's Tea Party scheduled for tomorrow, July 24th. It's an activity sponsored by the Salvation Army for all seniors 55 and over being welcomed. Oops, I just see that you needed to have RSVP'd by yesterday. I don't know, you might call them, see if they've got room. The contact number is 428-4621. The cost of the event is $3, and it sounds like it could be fun. So if you're still interested, give them a call, 428-4672. It was scheduled to begin... it is scheduled to begin Friday at 11 a.m. We're out of time for this first half hour of news from the Decatur area. We'll take a quick break and be right back with the second half hour. If you got to leave us now, it's been great reading with you today. And you take care and hope to catch you next week as well.